You were married when?
In 1950 in Chicago.
And your wife's name?
We call her Lynn, L-Y-N-N. Her name on our health insurance card is Ethelyn. Her last name was Scott. She was from Fort Dodge, Iowa, and she was working in Chicago like I was. We were married probably 13 months later.
How did you meet?
I'd seen Lynn and her twin sister and another girl walking home from a 12 o'clock mass, a religious service near where I lived. I kept my eye on them and I stalked them. So the following week I caught up with them. We were at a stop sign and I said, I wanted the priest to introduce us, but since he wasn't able to do that, I wonder if you'd like to come to my garage apartment for coffee. They said, yeah. And since I initiated this conversation just outside a bar, I also told people I picked Lynn up outside a bar, which is true, but under very different circumstances.
Well, you were confident then too, weren't you? Did you have children in your marriage?
We had seven.
Seven children?
When we went to Europe, we went with a 15-month-old kid, which was kind of unheard of at that time, but we enjoyed it. She actually became our passport. We could push this little kid into every place you ever wanted to go. She fronted for us because people like little children.
Yeah. So then they were all born and raised in Tulsa.
The first was in Chicago.
First one.
The other six were born in Tulsa.
Did any of them take up architecture?
No. I think one could have been a structural engineer like Tom, but he went into social work. No, none of them did this.
In 57, you partnered with Murray Jones Murray. Then comes along discussion about our Tulsa International Airport.
Yeah.
How does that come about?
Tulsa had hired an airport consultant named Lee Fisher. He was out of Chicago and South Bend. He understood aviation and he understood terminal buildings. And he recommended to the authority that they hire a young firm. Well, that was pretty good because that cut out all the old guys in Tulsa and gave us a free ride. It was kind of interesting. At that time, when we got the job in 1958, this is very important, there wasn't a single commercial jet in operation. There were five carriers in Tulsa, and the representative of each airline told us there would never, ever be jets in Tulsa. American Airlines said they thought they'd bring a jet in because we had the maintenance facility there. But we had read enough papers. We kind of thought the guys that we had contact with probably weren't looking at the whole thing farther down the line. So we decided to approach the design not as a tight glove, but as a loose mitten. We really wanted design flexibility because we knew the thing was going to change in ways that were unknown to us. For instance, in those days, everyone went from a gate lobby directly to the tarmac, rain or shine, got on a ladder or steps, went into an airplane. We thought that as aircraft got bigger, there would somehow be a technology or a way to get people directly from a gate lobby into the aircraft without going to the tarmac. But that meant you'd have to have a second level. So we designed all the footings and the roof load for our concourses to take care of the second floor that we thought would someday come. We use structural steel because of its flexibility. So even 60 years later, we've been told that Tulsa is probably one of the good medium-sized airports in the country because I think we were able to accommodate that flexibility rather easily.
So you were really designing for 10, 20 years in the future.
It seemed like it.
You had a budget to work with.
Apparently we were able to stay within that.
First airport was located at Apache and Memorial and opened August 22, 1919. It was a guy by Duncan McIntyre. McIntyre Field had three hangars to house 40 aircraft and a beacon for landings after sundown. He closed his airport during the 1930s, merged with R.F. Garland, Tulsa oil man, owner of the Garland Airport at 51st and Sheridan. He ran the airport, became the president of the new venture, and this airport would later become the Brown Airport at 61st and Yale. In 1940, he accepted a position McIntyre did with Lockheed Corporation. Charles Lindbergh landed at McIntyre Field in 1927. He'd been persuaded to visit Tulsa by Bill Skelly, and this field was not nearly up to the places that Lindbergh had normally landed. He had already landed at Oklahoma City Municipal Airport, Bartlesville Municipal Airport, and Muskogee's Hatbox Field. all of these were superior to McIntyre Field. And it says that Lindbergh pointed this out at a banquet given that night in his honor.
Amazing.
That's fun to hear that background to our airport. And then Tulsa claimed in 1930 that it had the busiest airport in the world. And they had numbers to prove that. Braniff Airways, American Airlines, TWA were coming in there. How did you decide on the design of Tulsa International Airport?
We selected steel because it was very flexible. We could add to it easily. But also, because we knew nothing about jets, I hired Bolt, Berank, and Newman out of Boston. They were consultants, and they had done a lot of work with the military on jets. We simply wanted to find out how noisy these things were, what the thrust was, what sort of accommodations needed to be made. So they made recommendations to use concrete fill on steel on the envelope over the walls and the roof structure. We thought that was probably a pretty smart move. I think after that, we kept in mind the need for the future and did what we could to prepare for it.
You use that flat roof line, which you had also used in your house, which I'll talk about. Talk to us about that design.
How did you come to conclude that flat roofs were a good thing to do when so many of them leak these days?
Well, of course, that's a roofing problem and drainage, but to simply have sloping roofs on multi-story buildings, sloping roofs on airports, even sloping roofs on houses, to us didn't seem to be a straightforward approach.
The community had to be excited about this. You broke ground in November of 1958 and opened November 16, 1961. And then on August 28, 1963, the facility was renamed Tulsa International Airport. Because then...
whatever standards were required for that designation. Tulsa at that time did have a 10,000-foot runway. And they owned, I think, 5,000 acres of land. So they were able to probably meet whatever qualifications were needed to establish it as an international airport. But I don't recall those circumstances too well.
But it had to be exciting, the opening day and time.
Oh, yeah, it really was.
A big celebration.
The community was really turned on by it. Yes, it was.
Because they had voted. They had to vote.
That's right. It was their airport.
Modern steel construction of that sort and of the sort that you designed your house, those are things that are somewhat common and have been around for a long time for my generation. But at that time, I'm surprised that the citizens of the city of Tulsa thought that was a good thing because they hadn't seen anything. How was that reception by the citizens of Tulsa? Was it automatic or did you have to sell it to the citizens of Tulsa?
Well, you know, the fact is that the world was really open to change a little bit more then. And I don't think it was a tough sell. I think we could just proceed in a manner that seemed logical and most people could buy into that. In fact, there was a prominent architect in France named Corbusier. He once said, architecture has nothing to do with style. Now, think about that. Architecture has nothing to do with style. That's really quite true. You solve problems in a logical way. You satisfy the physical and psychological. That includes art. But architecture really doesn't have to do with style. Every project, every program probably has its own unique needs. And you try to meet these needs without preconceived ideas, I think that's the way you move forward.
Were there any major challenges to the airport?
I don't think so. Even later and later years when they got into very sophisticated security systems for baggage claim, we were able to expand and deal with that pretty easily too. I don't think we encountered any problems really.
I wonder how many times you went through that airport, people didn't recognize you, and you could have said, I designed this airport. So how many architects worked on that?
Well, at that time, we probably had an office of about 10 or 12. And I imagine we had a staff of about 4 or 5, plus our consultants, mechanical, electrical, structural, acoustical. So it became a multidisciplinary team when you do projects of that sort.
Were there any other airports in the United States built to this design?
I think Love Field in Dallas had just been completed. I think we visited maybe one in Portland, but I don't think there was too much of a path for us to follow.
Yeah.
I think we're all kind of moving in a new direction together.
Yeah.